The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. And in the studio today, I'm really happy to have first-time guests for the Speakeasy, the proprietors of the Dead Rabbit. I've got Sean Muldoon and Jack McGarry. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Hi, how's it going?
great. Hi, thanks for making the trek out here on a weird, rainy Brooklyn day. It's like we had 2 weeks of summer, and now it's fall again. It's the weirdest thing. So thank you for being on the show. I'm glad that we could make time to do this. Especially you guys are constantly busy with the Dead Rabbit, and you guys are mostly probably polishing all of your awards and trophies for having one of the best bars, you know, in the world. That was kind of shitty. but you guys have been really just killing it. It's been no pun intended because it's called the Dead Rabbit, but it's been what, 14, 15 months now?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a very young place, but with already so much has happened for you guys. Mm-hmm. You guys must be on cloud nine with the place, right?
Do you want to start?
We're delighted with how everything's going, but we've learned before we opened the bar, we were here for 2 years, and we had a tough in New York before we opened the bar, you know, so we understand that... You never take anything for granted in this city.
That's true.
Every day is a new fight. And so every day we wake up, we constantly think of how do we make the place that one bit better, you know?
Yeah. I always say it's not a vacation town.
Certainly not.
No.
Yeah. And I don't understand people who take just vacations here.
I was just in San Francisco, and that felt like a vacation.
I'm sure. Did you get to do the whole, like, food and drink tour? I mean, like, you probably just went crazy there. I usually do. When I'm in San Francisco, I go crazy.
I spent a lot of money, for sure.
So... All right, so you were 2 years before Dead Rabbit opened, but the whole time you were before Dead Rabbit opened or before you started working on Dead Rabbit?
So we've been working on Dead Rabbit for the guts of 4 years. We've only opened, as I say, 15 months, but 4 years. So what is that, 2.5 years before that? We were constantly thinking about the Dead Rabbit, constantly researching. We were going out and looking at bars. I mean, we were in New York. I've been in New York now for 3.5 years, so... For the two and a half years before, all we did was research other bars, not just cocktail bars, but pubs, every sort of bar that we thought there might be something in that. We cross-referenced, we both went out and seen places, we thought what was good in a place and took hopefully the best of what we've seen and put it into one bar.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot going on with the place. I'll tell you that much, and that's really cool because, I mean, to me, you know, a lot of people will focus on like one, like a pub or a cocktail bar or like a dive bar or a restaurant bar, you know, like, and they'll do them separately. You've kind of like taken all these ideas and put them into one really big badass package.
Well,
which is rare.
I know Jack's probably going to want to talk here, but I'm going to quickly talk about this. We both came with a very clear thing in our heads that we wanted to create an amazing pub and an amazing cocktail bar. And the one thing that the one advantage we have was that Jack concentrated 100% on the cocktail bar element of it, and I concentrated 100% on the pub element of it. So we had two different. I was researching pubs more than cocktail bars, if you know what I mean. And Jack knew what he was doing with cocktail bars. So, but we took the ideas from the bar we ran in Belfast, which was the Merchant Hotel. That was what our cocktail bar upstairs was based on. And the bar we drank in Belfast was called the Duke of York. It was an Irish pub with a massive Irish whiskey collection. And we based everything on that downstairs.
Nice.
Yeah, it's particularly with the cocktail arena as well. We've been to a lot of cocktail bars all over the world, and sometimes they're quite stuffy and like you don't feel like you can relax in it. So a big part of what we were trying to do, not only in the tap room, but also in the parlor, in the cocktail bar, was to have that same kind of comfortability with that world-class kind of cocktail product. So that's something that we think we've achieved, you know. So
let's actually take it back a little bit. Let's talk about like what got you into bartending and like how you got so obsessive about, you know, this really amazing bar. Like, where did it all start? Who wants to go first?
His starts before Mike, so he can start.
So I've been in bars for 21, 22 years now. I basically got into bartending because I wanted to travel, and I was really interested back then in music and stuff like that. I wanted to make my own CD, and I wanted a job that would offer me the opportunity to travel and save money. So my whole idea was to go to Scotland to work in a hotel, save up some money, write some songs, come back to the world and be a famous rock star. And so the whole time I was bartending, it took me like from 1992 until 1997 to get to this point where I had a CD and I had all that stuff. And something happened that sort of made me sort of temporarily, well, it ends up with permanently put the CD on hold and concentrate on bartending as a career. And there was a defining moment that happened in my life. And it was around about, as I say, early 1998, I decided I was going to take bartending very, very seriously. Up until that point, it was a means to an end. It was a student mentality. Sure. And I set out in 1998, and my whole focus was, if I'm going to do this, I want to be the best in the world at it. And I didn't even know what that meant. But but I wanted to be the best in the world at it. Yeah. And it was basically, as I say, my whole early days was getting into... I wanted to do it for music, and I wanted to do it because it offered me the opportunity to travel and save money. But then something happened. The reality kicked in, and it was like, you've got to get a job. You've got to do something here. And I took it seriously.
I mean, I think, because I'm also a musician and a bartender, and I always make the connection between the two of them. They're both, in my opinion, they're both art forms. You're also communicating a message through, like, if you're bartending the right way, you're communicating a message, right? Same as writing a song. And yeah, you get to travel. Sometimes in a plane, sometimes in a really sneaky van. But yeah, that's great. Cool, man.
Yeah. I was basically, when you're younger in Ireland, I'm sure it's the same over here, you're constantly asking your mommy for a lend of money, but mm-hmm. you never pay it back. So it was getting to the stage where I was 15, 16 years of age, and my mom was saying, I'm not lending you any more money. You have to go out and fight for your own money. So I started working in a bar collecting glasses. And it was with my cousin, who was called Sean as well. So I started following him around bars that he was running. And it was a fortunate kind of series of events that led me to Sean. But there was a guy who worked with my cousin Sean, and then he went on to open a bar run a bar in Lisburn Road of Belfast called Tattoo. And then that's when I came across a former pupil of Sean's called Kieran Breen. And this guy was doing all this amazing fancy cocktail stuff. And I was in that period taking a year out from like my studies. And then I seen what this guy was doing. And then it was basically, the way I was brought up as a kid was, if you're going to do something, you give it 100%. And I heard about this guy, Sean Muldoon, and all this amazing stuff that he was doing in the very, very early days of the Merchant Hotel. And I want to be the best in the world at it. So when I heard about what Sean was doing, I felt like there was somebody else out there fighting the same type of fight, and I wanted to go and learn. So that's when I went to the Merchant, and 8 years later, me and Sean are opening own the Dead Rabbit. So
that's amazing, man. Were there any other resources? I mean, like, were you guys? Because I felt like when I first started getting into bartending and learning about like classic cocktail, well, I was kind of like studying before I got into bartending, I found that like the best resources were other bartenders. Yeah. You know, there weren't. There were all kinds of classic cocktail books that I was like looking at and things like that. But like you can't really like learn just from the books. You've got to like learn from other people, right? Well,
that was a beauty. Another thing that Sean was doing at the time with a friend of his called Stephen Patterson, there was this thing called the Connoisseurs Club, because the Merchant was, there was no cocktail scene in Belfast. It was the Merchant Hotel, and that was it. Still pretty much to this day, but this Connoisseurs Club initiative brought speakers from all over the world. Like everybody, I'm sure that they've probably been on this show, have been in Belfast talking to our staff and talking to the clientele, and that was a big inspiration for the both of us. But I'm sure you can talk a bit more about it.
Connoisseurs Club.
Yeah.
It was basically set up. We had a I was in a bar in London called The Player. It's owned by the guys at Old Milk and Honey over there, and they had a little section on their cocktail menu that was called In-Flight Upgrades. And In-Flight Upgrades was like you had a classic cocktail, say 10 classic cocktails like a Daiquiri, a Cosmopolitan, whatever it was. And you started off at an economy level, which was the regular house spirit, and then you had super class or club class, whatever it was called. And it was three different levels, and the cocktail went up in price depending on the quality of the spirit being used in the drink. And I remember thinking, I really like that. So I took the idea to the merchant, and we called it the Connoisseurs Club. And the difference between ours and theirs was, we didn't call it In-Flight Upgrades, obviously we called it Connoisseurs Club, but we had it was silver, gold, and platinum levels. But the platinum level was ridiculously priced. It was like literally the most expensive cocktails on the planet. And we did have the most expensive cocktail on the planet at the time.
The Mai Tai?
The original Mai Tai. Right. But it was part of this Connoisseurs Club thing, which was offered at the back of our cocktail menu. So our general manager of the hotel said to me one day, we should actually have a Connoisseurs Club where we invite people to come to the hotel, we'll put them up, and the whole idea would be to educate our staff as to what they're selling when it comes to these expensive spirits and educate our customers as to what they're buying. And that's how it started, a little conversation. We started to get together, as I say, with Stephen Patterson, a friend of mine back then who worked for a local drinks company. He got the guys over, he paid for their flights, we put them up, we paid for their food, and they also paid for their drink, the alcohol, whatever they were using. And we started this club, maybe to 20 people, and it was the first Monday of every month, and we'd done it for 13 months, and we got some big names in. We got Sasha Petrasky and people like that, Salvatore Calabresi, all these people. And then what happens is, how it becomes bigger is a little secret out there, talking about awards and stuff like that. We were all about awards. We wanted to win awards. We wanted to be the best in the world. Remember, I had this thing. I wanted to be the best in the world, and I didn't know how to be the best in the world. And all I wanted to do, and all Jack wanted to do, was to prove to the world that we were the best. And we were from Belfast, and nobody from Belfast ever won these type of awards. And so we were winning a lot of UK awards and stuff like that. And I put us forward for Tales of the Cocktail. And we were in, it was 2008, we were up for three awards, and we lost all three. And it was the year of Milk and Honey over here in New York. And I remember contacting a couple of weeks down the line the adjudicator, who was Simon Difford, and I asked him, like, where did we go wrong? How did we not win? Blah, 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 blah. I wasn't being a sore loser. I just wanted to know how we possibly could win. And he said to me, listen, you're from Belfast. He says, these bars are New York. He says, everybody knows these bars. These bars have been around for ages. He says, and these are American awards. They want to reward their own before anybody else, you know, that sort of thing. And so he says, my best advice to you would be, he says, you've either got to bring your bar to people or bring people to your bar. See the judges and stuff like that. He says, you've got to get those people to your bar or bring your bar to those people. And this made me think. And he said then, my advice to you would be the Connoisseurs Club thing you do. Instead of having a local brand ambassadors who are easy to get some drinks coming to come behind you, put a lot of money in it and get the right people over, get all these judges over and let them see your bar and blow them away with all your stuff. So this was like a eureka moment in my head. And I thought, right, we're going to do that. So the whole thing of the next year was that we're going to get all these Americans over to the bar, and we're going to get them maybe three or four times, and forget that once a month we're going to have one big event every couple of months, and it's going to be an American guy that comes over, and hopefully next year we're going to win. So the following year we won three awards. Yeah. And that's the secret.
That's the secret. That's amazing, man. Well, and also then after that, of course, you took the other advice too, which you brought your bar to the people over here too.
Yeah.
And we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we should definitely dig into how you got that going and what it all means, man. All right, back in a few.
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press,
Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy, and in the studio today I have the folks from The Dead Rabbit. I've got Jack and Sean. We've been talking about basically their start getting into the bar community and how they went from no awards with the most expensive cocktail in the world to sweeping three and then continuing on the steamroller of success. And we talked about the Merchant Hotel, and I had always read about it, and I've never been to Belfast or to the Merchant Hotel, but it's one of those places. It's like it's on my list. I got a long list. So let's get into the Dead Rabbit. I mean, we started off the show talking a little bit about like the idea of like the pub. Sean was taking care of the pub idea. Jack's doing the cocktail idea, and then first of all, let's talk about the name. Give us some insight to that. Because it is very New York centric. Like we were talking about bringing the bar to New York.
So, as I say, it's good that we finished off talking about the Connoisseurs Club, because the whole idea behind the Connoisseurs Club was to bring all these Americans over to the bar, these celebrity bartenders, the Dale DeGroffs, the Audrey Saunders, Dave Wondriches, these type of people over to the bar. And the whole idea was I would get them there, and then Jack would be the bartender that was blowing their minds behind the bar and doing all this dazzling, wonderful stuff. And the whole idea was that they would go back and basically spread the word like the Irish coffee was spread in San Francisco back in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. So it was that whole thing. We wanted Americans to talk about the bar, but to our amazement, these Americans that came over, they hung about our bar. They sat and watched Jack make his cocktails when all the other bars were closed. But during the day, when all the other bars were open, they drank in a bar called the Duke of York, which was the pub up the street that had the massive Irish whiskey collection, because that's where they felt at home. Yeah. And it was this thing me and Jack were going through our heads, like, why are they drinking up there? Why are they not drinking here? Even though we drank there, it's like we've brought them all the way over here and they're drinking in that pub. And then when the idea was put together, it was one of our regular customers that actually seen that we were bringing all these big names to Belfast. He said, listen, you guys have gone as far as you're going to go in Belfast. He says, like, there's nothing else for you to do. What are you going to do? Win another award? He says, like, it's time to branch out and do your own thing. And he says, would you come to New York? He was based in New York. He was Irish, but he was based in New York. And he says, well, if you're going to come over, you've got to come up with an idea that nobody else has done. So me and Jack looked at this. What was happening in Belfast? We had this fancy, fancy, beautiful 5-star cocktail bar. It was all table service. And then we had this pub where everybody that we brought over was drinking in. So we thought, listen, if we're going to create a pub that nobody else is doing, we've got to bring that Irish thing together with the cocktail thing that we do. And that's where it started. It literally started from the bar we worked in and the bar we drank in. And then we looked through, literally, we were looking at a period of time in New York history when, because we knew we were coming to New York, obviously, when something Irish and something cocktails were coming together. We knew that Jerry Thomas wrote the first ever cocktail book in 1862, and he was in New York, based in New York. We knew there was a famine that happened in Ireland between 1845 and 1851. A million people came through the gates of what was then called the Port of New York, which is now called the South Street Seaport. So we knew there was a connection in New York in the 1850s, 1860s between cocktails and Irish, something or other. And then we were looking for an area, and we realized that the bartender movement actually began in the financial district, we're on about Bowling Green subway station right now, that sort of area. We talked to Dave Warnich about this, and we got all the information back that we needed. We also knew that all those Irish immigrants settled in around that area, so we knew we had an area. And then it was literally Wikipedia. We looked up Wikipedia, Irish New York names, 1850s, 60s, and one name that came up that struck a chord with us was the Dead Rabbit. We didn't even know what a Dead Rabbit was. We didn't even know it was a gang. We'd probably watched that film, Martin Scorsese's film, 100 times and hadn't even picked that up. And we thought, right, that name sounds like a pub. The Dead Rabbit sounds like a pub. And that's basically, it started, literally, Wikipedia is where we got the name from. And the whole gang part and that sort of thing came afterwards. But we were looking for something that would bring it all together. We knew we had an area. We knew we had a concept. And then the defining thing was, literally, one person, a guy called, when we looked into the whole history of the Dead Rabbits, we realized there was a guy, their leader was a guy called John Morrissey, one-time leader. And he was the guy that would have came through, not when the famine was happening, he was before the famine, but he came through South Straits Airport as a, no, he didn't even come through. He would have, he basically settled in Canada and came down to New York. But the thing is, he would have been based around the docks, the waterfront, and he became one of the most powerful figures in New York. He became a very, very good friend of Jerry Thomas. He owned all the bar. He owned a lot of bars and gambling houses on Broadway. As far as I know, he was an investor in one of Jerry Thomas's bars. He sold a bar to Jerry Thomas. They became very, very close. So this one character crossed the bridge. He was the guy that made the relation from the immigrant to the gentleman society that was taking place in Broadway. So we knew we had a character. We knew we had an identity, and the rest is history.
He was also a badass.
A badass.
Was his nickname Old Smoke?
Old Smoke, yeah.
That's I people just, you don't want to hear the nicknames people give me, but they're not cool as that. I think that's you really tapped into something historically that no one has done, you know, and it's a really, like I said, a really badass dude and some really badass history. I think one of the things that's really cool about the place too is, like, first of all, the menu, your new menu that came out a couple months ago is just, it's one of the most beautiful. It's a book. I mean, it's a graphic novel. And who's the artist who did that?
Mark Rennell from, he's underneath our creative team, Drinksology in Belfast. So we give everything to Drinksology and they sorted all the artwork for us.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, like, and it tells a story about, it beautifully tells a story in like the, about, Old Smoke, John Morrissey, and it divides each of those pages, the different parts of the story, into different types of drinks, mm-hmm. like, you know, different categories of drinks. But it's great, like almost like brings a tear to my eye, just because it's like, and when I look at the book, just because it's such a well thought out menu, but also like the story is just really cool. You know, it's a really cool story that, you know, no one's seen, and like that's exactly like what you were saying. You know, mm-hmm. You're trying to put, and you have very successfully put a bar together that no one's seen before. And, you know, here in the States, it's, before you guys opened the Dead Rabbit, it's like, if I were going to an Irish bar, it was like, you know, Guinness and Jameson, and that's basically the extent of it. But you guys have really crushed it, like, on the downstairs pub. You have so many Irish whiskeys that, I know you guys, I was like, can I get some Green Spot? And you're like, not yet. Daniel was...
We can get it now.
Now it's in the... Yeah. Yeah. But I remember being like, oh my God, all these whiskeys that like...
Uh-huh. We've got, at the minute in the bar, we've got 110 bottles, but we are going to have about another 15 coming in the next couple of days.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, and like...
A lot of it's not for sale, but we give it out to the right people.
Right. You know?
Like yourself.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that after the show. I mean, like, you know, up until this point, people knew, like, Tullamore Dew, Powers, and Jameson. You mm-hmm. know, Bushmills, I guess. There's probably one more that I'm missing. But, I mean, there's probably a dusty bottle of Middleton in there somewhere, you know. In any Irish bar in the United States, that's the extent of it. And you guys have really taken it to the next level. And especially... I don't know, this is kind of sidetracking, but, like, especially with American whiskeys becoming so, like, hard to get because they're, like, running out, it's, like, it's awesome to open the eyes of the guests to this entire huge selection of whiskey that we had never really seen before. Mm-hmm. And you're doing God's work, you know? But, yeah, it's a wonderful selection. And, of course, you've got... The one of the best Irish coffees. Do you think of the Irish coffee as an Irish drink or an American drink? Because it was popularized here in San Francisco.
That's what I was talking about in my a few minutes ago. That it was like the merchant was invented in Belfast, but it was sort of made famous in America. And it's the same with the Irish coffee. I mean, I was in Buena Vista 4 days ago, and the rate that they were knocking out those Irish coffees and the amount of Irish coffees they were knocking out, I mean, you just can't compete with that, you know?
It's insane.
You know, I mean, I think we do a better Irish coffee, but I think they do far more, you know?
Yeah, it's, you know what? I'm just going to say this. I think I don't know if I'm going to be allowed at Tales of Cocktail again for saying this, but I think I make a better Sazerac than I've been able to find in the Monteleone, which is, but, you know, there's something about having a Sazerac at the Monteleone, you know, or a Vucare for that matter, you know, but, I'm going to get blacklisted for saying that, but you know what I'm saying? There's like, there's nostalgia in like having the drink at the place. You know what I mean? You guys, well, go back to the cocktail thing. You guys, I had Frankie Marshall on a month or so ago, and like a month and a half, 2 months ago, actually. And I was like asking her, I was like, dude, how is it working at the Dead Rabbit? Like, how many cheater bottles do you have in your well? And she's like, I don't know, like 90 or 100, like Dasher bottles. Like, that's insane, man. Like, so, I mean, we're like I told you, this show goes by very quickly. But, I mean, like, how do you... I don't even know how you train for that.
When we set the bar up, the cocktail bar upstairs costs an awful lot of money, the setup. But when we set it up because as part of our signature and our DNA is having large cocktail menus and having a cocktail menu that tells a story. So the stations and everything was built for that. So we always knew from the get-go that it was going to be, I think at the minute there's 300 cheater bottles. Wow. And that's irrespective of the speed rails and the backboard. And it just seems to keep getting bigger and bigger. But we've been very fortunate now. We're coming into a bit of change now with a bartender moving back home to open his own bar and one other person moving on. But we've had more or less the same team since we've opened. So we've been very fortunate that way. But change is always good. But it does take about a month or 2 months to be in the bar all the time to kind of really suss it out and get it. And even if I go away for a week and I come back and get behind the bar, there's times where I'm scratching my head and I don't know where I'm going. But it just takes you to be there a lot to get used to it.
Well, I'm sure you guys are there all the time anyway. So
when we're in the country, we're there all the time. But one of the big things that you're talking about successes. One of the big things that makes the Dead Rabbit Cocktail Bar a success is the team we have, for sure. There, you couldn't have wanted a better opening team. You couldn't have dreamt of a better opening team. And I want to make that very clear. Yeah. Very clear.
Yeah, I mean, and every time I've been there, which I feel like I've been there quite a bit, but it's still never enough, you know? It's one of my favorite places to go. It's just nothing but hospitality, you know? Mm-hmm. From the time you sit down and you get little punch glass, you know, like a moose booze, as someone said.
That's a big part of our ethos above everything else is the hospitality. And all of our staff have it. We had issues with one or two people before, but when we hire, we're hiring personality and people who are driven towards hospitality. It's not, we don't care if you've won head or bartender of the year 14 times in a row. We care about if you're a nice person or not. So,
you know, no one ever remembers the bartender that gave him a bad drink. Even it could be the greatest drink that you ever had in the world, but if you were an asshole, then you'll never remember that drink. But you could pour me a beer and a shot, and if you're awesome, I'm coming back to see you, and I'll always remember you.
Yeah,
you know,
100%.
And you guys have great cocktails and great beers and great whiskeys, so that's why I come back, man. I guess we're at the end of the show, so the website is Dead Rabbit NYC, or is it The Dead Rabbit NYC?
Oh, just
DeadRabbitNYC.com.
Cool. Everyone, I strongly suggest you go to this bar if you haven't been before. I mean, you've probably read about it a billion times, but you should definitely go. It's on Water and Broad. You can't get more downtown than that, and you can't get better than the Dead Rabbit. So thanks, Sean and Jack. I'm so glad we finally got a chance to have you on the show, and can't wait to see you at the Dead Rabbit.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Anytime. My pleasure. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week when, actually, we're going to be doing a little derby show. Post-derby show. All right. Cheers. Rhythm and blues at Sam.
It's going to get you some in the air. Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.